G'day humans, welcome to the safe space for dangerous ideas. And what does it mean to be racist? Can a person of colour ever be racist towards a white person? Can a person of colour be racist towards another person of colour? Or is racism just prejudice plus power, as the new definition insists? This is all coming to a fore in Australia at the moment. Over the past few weeks, amid a furore over one of our greatest athletes, in some respects, everything that can be said has been said about this incident. And in other respects, the deepest questions that it raises about bigotry and tolerance and identity haven't really been touched in an authentic way, as far as I can tell. So I feel like I ought to touch them. My feet have just landed in Australia after a big overseas trip, so I was stunned by this news and disappointed at the way that it's been treated in the media and the conformism, I suppose, the ease with which people's opinions about it have fallen along neat ideological lines. If you don't know what happened, if you're not Australian, basically the allegation, which has not yet been proven in court, the allegation is that 14 months ago, in January of 2023, Australia's greatest sports star, Samantha Kerr, the captain of the Australian women's soccer team and the star of its performance in the Women's Soccer World Cup last year, which was hosted in Australia, spent a night in jail in southwest London after being charged with the racial harassment of a police officer. Now, Sam Kerr is Australian, but she has some Indian heritage on her father's side. She would probably pass for white. I didn't know she was not white until she rose to fully national prominence and became an icon. Nonetheless, the cop was definitely white, and after an altercation in a taxi in the wee hours of the morning, the allegation is that she vomited in a taxi and was arguing about the taxi fare. The police were called, and she called one of the police officers, quote, a stupid white bastard, according to the police's allegation. Now, her legal team say she didn't say stupid white bastard, she said stupid white cop. Nonetheless, the relevant point is that the British authorities charged her not only with harassing a police officer, but with the additionally critical charge of being racially aggravated, racial harassment, because she said a stupid white bastard or a stupid white cop, allegedly. The question has arisen in Australia, is that a bad thing to say? Is it true to say that it's racist if a person of colour, partly of colour, I suppose if you have one drop now, you're considered being of colour, punches up towards an officer of the law? And the New South Wales Premier, who's like the governor of the most populous state in Australia, was asked about this, and he gave a simple one-word answer as to whether or not it's racist. No. He said, no. What she did was not racist. The Premier of Western Australia, which is where she is from, was also asked about it. He said, not racist. Full support for Sam Kerr. What's interesting, and perhaps the most telling about face, came from one of Australia's greatest ever football players, soccer players, Craig Foster, who is now a prominent anti-racism campaigner. He played 29 games for Australia's national soccer team, the Socceroos. Of course, they're called the Socceroos. Ridgy-didge, mate, crack out the didgeridoo and let's play some Socceroo. He was appointed a very prestigious member of the Order of Australia for his service to multiculturalism and human rights and refugee support organisations and to football. So he's involved in the anti-racism space. And yet he was not sufficiently aware of the new dogmas about racism. And so when the news broke, he was interviewed on television about it, and he said this.
You know, if I was the chair of Football Australia, this is a live issue right now. You know, we're talking about racism, which is really serious. Mm. You know, players have repeatedly been stood down, and you have to answer that. You have to answer that question right now.
So that set a cat among the pigeons. A white man saying that it's racist for a quote unquote woman of colour to allegedly call a white person a stupid white something or other. In fact, he blundered even further, according to the, I suppose, the orthodoxies and the dogmas of modern social justice, by urging football's governing body, soccer's governing body in Australia, Football Australia, to potentially strip Sam Kerr of her captaincy. She's the captain of the women's soccer team, if the charges are proven, in order to make a strong stand against racism. Craig has since had a change of heart. He posted an about face on Twitter, which I don't want to get stuck into, Craig. This is not an attack on him. It is just evidence of where we're at in the culture wars, that you can come out with what seems like a fairly commonsensical point of view and be forced in a short period of time to essentially write a screed, a big about face, pledging your allegiance to the orthodoxy that you transgressed. I should emphasize also, I think it's ridiculous that Sam Kerr would be charged by a cop. I think there are all kinds of conversations we should be having about police officers and their power, and perhaps arguably their thin skin in not tolerating the rough and tumble of a fairly rough and tumble job. So my support is with Sam Kerr either way. I think it's ridiculous that she's found herself in this situation. But that's because it's petty, not because it wasn't necessarily racist. So let's take a look at Craig Foster's about face, which he posted on Twitter. I won't read the whole thing because it's two entire pages long. But he says, the need for national racism education is critical. The evident gaps in much of our knowledge when approaching the Sam Kerr case alone should be the spur we need to make it happen. I fully support a national, with a capital N, anti-racism, with a capital A, capital R, framework, capital F, for this reason. I fully support a national anti-racism framework for this reason. Already, there's a little alarm bell going off in my head anytime someone says something and then has to retract it by pledging their allegiance to a, quote, capital national anti-racism framework. I mean, it sounds a little bit sort of Stalinist, doesn't it? Anyway, let's go on. Craig then goes on to muse about what racism is and says, could a person of color even be guilty of racism? Are there double standards? He asks. And he answers himself, saying, all important questions, like many. I mistakenly thought that comments that referenced any color and were discriminatory, demeaning, or hostile were a form of racism. I apologize to Sam for that mistake. He apologizes to Sam for the mistake of thinking that comments that reference any color and are discriminatory are a form of racism. He goes on to say racism can only be, and by the way, I'm cutting out bits here, but I'm not changing the meaning of what he's saying, but it's just for time. I'm jumping a couple of paragraphs ahead. Racism can only be perpetrated against a marginalized person or group. And then he cites the definition of racism from the Diversity Council of Australia. Again, always a little bit fishy to me when someone says something from the heart, that it's wrong and that they regard those comments as having been racist, and then immediately turn around and say, actually, there's an official dogma that's been handed down to me. I mean, it's a bit like Russian state television of them, isn't it? Actually, I've just been informed that the Diversity Council of Australia has a different definition from what my common sense said. Therefore, allow me to recite the dictionary definition, rather, not the dictionary definition, actually. The dictionary definition would be closer to what Craig Foster originally said, but the Diversity Council of Australia's definition, which says racism is when an individual or organization with race-based societal power discriminates, excludes, or disadvantages a racially based person because of their race, color, descent, nationality, ethnicity, religion, or immigrant status. Race-based societal power has to be involved. So one of Australia's most successful athletes does not have that particular type of power because although she grew up in Western Australia, her father has some Indian heritage. Therefore, she lacks race-based societal power. She's a multimillionaire. She's one of the most successful Australians in the world, but she lacks power because it's not race-based. Craig Foster goes on to say, definitions of racism were not designed to protect me as a white Anglo-Australian male, nor a white police officer who has even greater legal and racial power. setting aside for the moment whether or not it's true, the police officer has greater racial power than a successful white Australian former athlete who has a Medal of the Order of Australia. You know, the working class Bobby kept set up against him. Don't know why that person has greater racial power. Nonetheless, it's true to say, I mean, the weird thing is, definitions of racism absolutely were designed to protect white people against people of color right up until the 1960s. You know, it's not a new thing that we have had unfair racial structures and an anti-egalitarian attitude towards race and minority groups. Up until the civil rights movement, the finger of the state was very forcefully on the scales of injustice, rigging everything in favor of white people and using definitions of race and identity and immigration status. I mean, for heaven's sake, Australia had an official white Australia policy for decades up until the middle of the 20th century. Well, you know, middle is generous. I think it was 1969 that it was gotten rid of. So, of course, there has been racial definitions that have suited white people. What happened was that between the 1960s and the 2000s, the sort of first decade of the 2000s, we decided that the way to get rid of racism was to get rid of racism and effectively to stop considering race. We had a Martin Luther King Jr., Barack Obama attitude towards race. Let's try to turn down all of the dials on considerations of race and treat everybody equally. It's only in the past 10 years that this new Diversity Council of Australia definition of racism has insisted that it's only racism if you have prejudice plus power. It's only racism if the person who is committing the offence has race-based societal power. So God bless Craig Foster and everybody who has been sort of forced to step in line in lockstep with this new orthodoxy in the wake of the Sam Kerr charge and allegations. But it's not true to say that definitions of racism were not designed to protect white Anglo-Australian males. They were right up until 3 seconds ago in cultural time, at which point we did away with that, and now it's the social justice left that's trying to bring them back in the opposite direction. Nonetheless, Craig goes on to say, that is because, in other words, that racism was not designed to protect him. That is because I cannot experience racism in Australia. I cannot experience racism in Australia. I mean, is this some kind of 1984 Big Brother Orwellian wordplay? We're basically just redefining the word, right? We're just taking the word racism, animus towards race, and we're saying it no longer means what the common sense meaning is. Therefore, Craig Foster, a white male, cannot experience this new thing that we're now giving the same name as a thing that we all understood in the past. I cannot experience racism in Australia. Why? Because we just changed the definition of racism. All right, well, that's convenient, isn't it? Let's just change it to something that a white man can't experience. I'm not at all surprised, writes Craig, finally, at having made a mistake. And I'm very pleased to be able to learn. After all, he writes, I often tell people, these conversations are challenging. Just approach it in good faith, learn, correct mistakes, and grow. A beautiful sentiment. Learn, correct mistakes, and grow. I agree. Can we also add another word like think? Can we also add another word like reason? Could we say learn, correct mistakes, grow, think, reason, debate, argue, hash it out perhaps, have uncomfortable conversations? No. You have to learn, correct mistakes, and grow according to the dogma, according to the orthodoxy, according to the Diversity Council of Australia's definition. If you don't, the mob's going to bloody come for you. Again, I'm not having a go at Craig Foster. Who wants to be the target of the kind of social justice mob coming for you because you said what you thought was the right thing in calling out racism? Then they said, no, that's not racism. It's not racism when we do it. And he goes, oh, shit, I don't want to get cancelled. And look, maybe he has really learned. Maybe this is a genuine change of heart. Maybe all of the people who thought that they had a definition of racism that no longer applies and that feel like they're being threatened by with exclusion from polite society and from, I suppose, the social justice club of well-meaning, university-educated, mostly white elites. Maybe they really have had a change of heart and they've thought this through carefully and it makes sense to them. Maybe also some of them are just afraid, some of them are just cowardly, and some of them are not, I suppose, keen enough, or maybe as keen as I am, at actually wrestling with big ideas to add to their learning and their correcting of mistakes and their growth the possibility of thinking, arguing, debating, and reasoning. So that about face I just thought was instructive because it reads like someone who's just come out of a Maoist re-education camp repenting for thought crimes of the past. But it's not just Craig Foster, it's so many people around Australia. This is the sentiment of experts. Racism can only be perpetrated against a marginalized person or group. So, is the powerlessness of the recipient relevant or the power of the perpetrator more relevant? According to the Diversity Council, the relevant thing is that a person with race-based societal power is saying the harassing thing, the demeaning thing, the prejudiced thing. And yet, there's another case going on in Australia at the moment in which you have two rugby league players, one of them Samoan Australian, Spencer Leniu. He has received an 8-week ban for calling a rival player, who's an Indigenous bloke, a monkey. This was at the season opener. They were playing in Las Vegas, and apparently there's a long history of racially coded abuse on the field in rugby league, especially towards First Nations Australians. It's appalling. The Samoan Australian rugby league player says he didn't realise that calling him a monkey was racial in nature, and he has apologised. Nonetheless, he's been given this 8-week ban. But hang on a second. I thought that the Diversity Council of Australia, whose mandates everybody now seems terrified to parrot, says that you need to have race-based societal power in order for it to be racism. Well, how does a Samoan bloke, how does a Samoan footy player have greater societal power than an Indigenous bloke? Like, what if the Indigenous player had found out just before they went on the field that actually, he wasn't Indigenous. He was of Indian descent, like Sam Kerr is. Well, Indians do a lot better. They're a lot better off in Australia than Indigenous Australians do. In fact, they earn more than white Australians do. Would that then mean that it's not racist because he's in a better position? Like, I don't understand. You've got two people of colour who are sledging each other, harassing each other in, you know, probably a good-natured way from at least the harasser's perspective. Doesn't excuse it, but nonetheless, it's part of the rough and tumble. And it obeys a different logic, different laws of gravity, so to speak, culturally, than the alleged Sam Kerr incident does. So imagine, for example, like I'm just trying to wrestle with what power means in all this, right? Imagine you've got a white homeless woman crossing the road and being cut off by a BMW that's driven by a wealthy Pakistani-Australian cardiac surgeon on his way to a round of golf. And the homeless white woman calls him, some racial slur. Or imagine a Chinese-Australian corporate lawyer who grew up in the Hong Kong private school system being ripped off by a Greek-Australian mechanic about whether he was overcharged for repairs to his Mercedes. Are we sure that we're talking about only race-based power? Like, is that the only salient variable here? The white homeless woman is capable of racism towards the rich Pakistani-Australian cardiac surgeon on his way to a round of golf in his BMW because she's white and he's a person of colour. I mean, that's what the Diversity Council of Australia's definition says. Racism is when an individual or organisation with race-based societal power It doesn't matter in the Sam Kerr incident that she's a multimillionaire successful athlete and the cop is essentially a working class. Like, take cop out of the equation, because I think it muddies things here. As I said, I'm really uncomfortable with the police using the power of the state and their power as privileged officers of the state to pursue petty vendettas. But imagine that the cop was instead any other lower middle class government employee who's a white man and is faced with abuse, racial abuse from a wealthy woman of color. Are we certain that the power cleaves only according to race? I thought the point of intersectionality, original intersectionality, was that there are lots and lots of different ways in which power, prejudice, and privilege all coincide. So that if you're a homeless person and you're a lesbian and you're a trans person, then all of those things kind of coalesce into a mosaic, a network of disadvantage that is greater than the sum of the parts. Isn't the real point here, the sort of elephant in the room, class and status? Everything is being reduced down to this one single variable of race without consideration of other variables that are surely relevant. I mean, the reason why it's being reduced in this case is because England has laws on the books which actually make it an additional crime if harassment was racially motivated. But what if the harassment was class motivated or was about denigrating a poor person and kicking down over and over and over again and making their lives more miserable? Is that kosher? Do you get off scot-free for that? It strikes me that there are only a few ways of coming down here. Either you say race is the salient factor and calling a cop a white bastard is as bad as calling as a cop calling a young Aboriginal kid a black bastard, and that seems just silly, right? I mean, if you were to take a purely racially purist point of view and do away with the Diversity Council definition, do away with all these definitions and come back to, look, any racially tinged comment is equally bad. That can't be right. You know, you have to have a power imbalance or privilege of some kind. It's obvious that a cop calling a poor Indigenous kid a black bastard is worse than a cop being called a white bastard. But the alternative would be to say that power is actually the salient factor, and people who have lots of ways of achieving their goals, they might have a powerful job title like cop, or they might have lots of know-how like a lawyer, or they might have lots of connections like a politician, or they might just have lots of money like a neurosurgeon or a cardiac surgeon. You might say that they're fair game and they ought to shut up a bit when it comes to denigrating other people, but cop a bit of denigration themselves. That doesn't seem crazy to me as a social norm. It doesn't seem crazy to me to say that morally, people who have all the chips should have to tolerate a little bit more shit than people who have no chips, who have no one in their corner, who have no cards to play. But as a criminal matter, surely it's impossible to legislate that, which is why the state should probably just keep out of such things, and the UK probably shouldn't have laws on the books like the one that Sam Kerr has been charged with. Because how can the law be nuanced enough to possibly capture all of the multifarious ways in which bigotry can express itself and prejudice and power can express itself? Instead, what we've got is this weird hybrid that, you know, the new social justice elite have come up with, and Craig Foster has been forced to parrot, and the Diversity Council of Australia is insisting that everyone go along with, otherwise they're dinosaurs. This prejudice plus power model, it seems like it makes a certain amount of intuitive sense, but the problem is that it defines power exclusively along racial lines. It defines power as whiteness. I mean, that definition is right there. Racism is when an individual or organization with race-based societal power. Now, I'm not denying that white privilege has existed. If you're white, then you may have had lots of problems, but one of those many problems was not that you were persistently judged by your race. Although you can argue that Greeks and Jews were whites who were always a bit suspect to traditional Anglo society, and even, you know, communities like the Polish in the UK or Italians in America were as well. So historically, yes, there's been white privilege. Today, it's a slightly harder case to make. I mean, I'm on very sensitive territory here, aren't I? Treading on all the eggshells and, you know, potentially triggering all the tripwires. A white man saying that racism is not the most fundamental motivating injustice in society right now. Call me old-fashioned. I would say that class and status and economic injustice are more salient right now. But let's just think about this clearly, right? What are the racial differences in modern society in 2024? There are more, look, Indian Australians earn more than whites in Australia. In the UK, South Asians hold more wealth than whites do. Asians earn more than whites do in America. You know, non-whites do brilliantly in lucrative fields like medicine. And the diversity targets that most corporations have to hire more minorities are so intense that it is inconceivable these days that a woman of color with identical skills and experience to a white man does not have a slight advantage. I mean, come on. Of course they do. A friend of mine was speaking with a very, very experienced and talented, high-flying Australian woman of South Asian extraction, a Pakistani Australian. And she was talking about leaving her job, and she said, if I left, I'd have to find another job. And then she said, but I mean, of course I'd get hired. Look at me. And my friend said, well, I mean, you'd also get hired because you're really good at what you do. And she laughed and said, yeah, of course that as well. And she was a bit embarrassed. But that's where we're at, right? A highly qualified, highly experienced, good worker who's a woman, a Pakistani Australian woman, knows, we all know that she has a slight edge at the moment, given diversity dogmas in corporations, than a white man. Now, I'm not crying foul about this. You know, that is a legitimate way to redress former cultural and racial injustice if we want to go down that route. But the idea that the main thing that creates inequality, injustice, and discrimination in society at the moment is racism as conceived exclusively of white people targeting people of color is just out of date. It is just bonkers. Why is race the sole arbiter of a person's supposed power in the prejudice plus power matrix? I mean, coming back to those two footy players, those two rugby league players, right? One of whom was suspended for calling the racial slurs against the Indigenous one. There was no racial imbalance there. There was no prejudice plus power. But we rightly understand that there should be a consequence. There should be. I mean, if instead of both being football players, what if the target of the slur, the Indigenous bloke, was the CEO of a mining company? Or a corporate tax accountant, would the slur be equally wrong? I'm not sure. I don't think so. I think if it was, Elon Musk or, the Prime Minister of the UK or something who was receiving a racial slur, then that is less bad than if you're punching down to someone who has less power, even if the racial outlook is exactly the same. I mean, what's the plausible or most generous response that you might get from an identitarian social justice activist here? It might be something like, it would still be just as wrong because the CEO or the accountant who of color still belongs to a community that has been historically disadvantaged. They don't enjoy white privilege. They might enjoy other privileges, but they don't enjoy white privilege, which opens up a lot of other questions, like, why do they get to be the beneficiaries of wrongs that were done to people in the past who they didn't even know? Or why is white privilege the privilege to trump all other privileges? Or isn't it a bit condescending to say to a successful non-white person that they're still fundamentally downtrodden because of the color of their skin? And most controversially, perhaps, it raises the question, if racism by whites is the supreme explanation for the power imbalances that we see in society, whether you're defining that as personal animus towards people of another race or just structural racism that holds back people of color, if it is the salient factor, the explanation for differences in outcomes between racial groups, then why do some non-white races thrive and others can't get ahead? Like, why do Koreans do well everywhere? Why are Nigerian Americans doing so well if anti-black racism is the sole explanation for black dysfunction in America? I mean, take race out of it altogether and you get a clearer picture. You know, it may just be muddying the waters, so to speak. Why do Dutch and Armenian migrants make good money, but Irish and Brazilian migrants don't make much money? Surely we're not just talking about race here. We're talking about some combination of self-selection in terms of who comes to countries and how their communities are structured. You know, there are kind of cultural rhythms, like the norms that exist in those cultures, norms around education, around financial restraint, around sobriety and work ethic and family or whatever it might be. For social justice dogmatists, this all just doesn't compute. Every unequal outcome is evidence of prejudice. You know, this is now a massive industry in the United States. Ibram X. Kendi is a bestseller. He even has a book called Anti-Racist Baby that socially justice-minded, you know, Americans are buying to teach their babies about how important it is to understand that we're all divided inexorably into racial groups and that the history of the world is a history of those racial groups squabbling and fighting over an ever-shrinking pie. You've got these, you know, these sort of dinners where white women pay thousands of dollars to learn how they're racist so that people can come and talk to them over dinner about racial injustice. You've got Robin DiAngelo running corporate seminars about how racism underpins, you know, white racism against people of color underpins essentially all communal and cultural interactions in a workplace. There's big money in this and big vested interests in this. They don't want to be told that racism is not prejudice plus power. Yet the crazy thing is, they fundamentally make that term effectively tautological, because the social justice advocates who are pushing racism is prejudice plus power define both prejudice and power as being determined by your race. Prejudice is all about race. Power is all about race. So when you say racism is prejudice plus power, you're really just saying racism is racism plus racism. Oh, thank you for that enlightening point. I mean, they rig the deck. They sort of redefine everything. They redefine racism to mean only something that someone with race-based societal power can do. They redefine privilege to mean that you're in a race that is privileged. They redefine power to mean that you have racial power. Therefore, it's racism, racism, racism. Racism is racism, is racism, is racism. Now, you can apply this same model to any other identity group, sexuality, gender, but here it's most salient because we're all talking about race because of the ridiculous UK charge against Sam Kerr. What is missing here? The piece of the jigsaw that actually makes sense of our intuitions, the thing which the modern identitarian left has erased from the conversation about what is bad and what is worse about different ways of being held back or denigrated, is class, economic power, cultural status, cachet. Do you get invited to long lunches at high-end restaurants? And do you have the phone number of a fancy high hat lawyer who owes you a favor? Class. Do you have a position where you can send an email or lodge a complaint and institutions will get a move on? The wheels will actually start turning in your favor. Or to get anything done, do you have to go to a government service center and take a ticket and wait in line and be told that computer says no? That's class. Did you go to school with people who now work for corporations and governments, or with people who work as checkout cashiers and Uber drivers? That is class. That is the real injustice. That is where discrimination and difficulty in getting ahead genuinely stems from in 2024. It didn't always. We rightly did away with overt racial discrimination. And for the half century between the 1960s and the first decade of the 2000s, it was heading in the right direction. Now we've all drunk the Kool-Aid and decided that what we really should be doing is what white people had been doing prior to the 1960s, but just in the opposite direction. This is why the Sam Kerr incident, allegation, has been so confusing. A cop is lower class than a world champion, multimillionaire athlete and coach. But the social justice hierarchy downgrades the world champion, multimillionaire athlete, tells her that actually she has an oppressed status because her father is of Indian descent. Therefore, she gets to play this card, and the working class, lower middle class cop is the oppressor. As I say, the fact that he's a cop does complicate things because cops really do have additional power to being an ordinary white man. But the idea that a multimillionaire athlete and coach, world champion, is the oppressed person in this scenario is a little bit weird. I mean, if the cop was any other flavor of lower middle class government employee, it would be ridiculous to say that he's the powerful one because he's a white man. And that is what's being said. The allegation is not that Sam Kerr's alleged slur was not racist because he's a cop. The allegation is it's not racist because he's a white man. And in order to be racist, you have to enjoy, and I quote from the Diversity Council of Australia, race-based societal power. Yet when there are actual real-world examples of racism, such as the between people of colour, that is, such as the racism that we saw on the field from a Samoan Australian player towards an Indigenous player, we all sort of quietly throw that rule book out the window because deep down inside, we know that we're just talking bullshit and that racism is more complicated than that. So I would have three takeaways from this. Firstly, don't make these kinds of laws, England. Don't police being mean and being an asshole. It's too difficult. It's too complicated. If you're going to enforce them uniformly, then you end up with ridiculous situations like Sam Kerr finds herself in. It's absurd. She shouldn't have spent a night in jail, and she shouldn't be charged. Look, if the allegations, even that the police say are true, are true. I mean, charge her with being unruly or whatever, but don't add the additional wrinkle of racism. It shouldn't matter why you're being mean to somebody, why you're harassing somebody. Harassment should just be harassment. Now, there can be incitement to violence laws, so if you go out and you say, oh, let's all go and beat up people who look like such and such, that should be a crime because there you're going to lead to actual real-world harms. But simply expressing some slur, a slur is a slur regardless of the content of it. Don't start getting inside people's brains trying to figure out what they meant. The second point I would make is that cops just need to cop it a bit more. You've taken that job on. You're going to cop it a little bit. We don't mean to be mean to you, but suck it up to some extent. And the third point I would make, the most important one, after saying that there shouldn't be laws that govern speech and that cops should have thicker skin, is that class and power and resources, the ability to achieve your goals, are what matters. Your ethnicity doesn't matter as much as that. The color of your skin does not matter in 2024 as much as the way you walk, the way you talk, who you know, how much you earn, what your education is. Like, these things sometimes overlap, of course, because, equality is not spread equally. So you'll have race mapping onto economic injustice. But the way to resolve those racial disadvantages is to address the economic injustice, and then anyone's happy. Everyone's happy, rather. If you want to fix inequality, go straight for inequality. You'll have more buy-in. The middle class, the whites, will be more supportive of policies that try to lift people up on the basis of their disadvantage rather than policies that try to lift people up because they belong to a historically marginalized community and they look a bit like people who were wronged in the past. Don't use divisive racial signifiers as proxies for injustice. Just go at the injustice. Target the injustice directly with what the left used to be about, providing opportunity for everybody, regardless of who you are. So I wish Sam Kerr all the best. I wish Craig Foster all the best. And I wish anyone who actually wants to wrestle with these issues thoughtfully, using reason, instead of simply reciting dogmas that they've been handed at the threat of a mob coming for them, definitely all the best. See you soon.